What's up, everybody? My name is Matt Story, and I'm the host of What's Your Story podcast, where I get to sit with leaders from all different fields and industries to learn how their experience as a person of color has helped them to blaze a new trail and make a unique impact on our world. Today's guest is Minda Hartz, CEO and founder of The Memo. This is a great discussion because Minda's story is truly inspiring. How she took what could have been a traumatic experience that forced someone to not want to be a part of the corporate America, and she actually took a step back and said she could not only change it for herself, but she could also make changes for future generations so that they didn't have to go through some of the things that she experienced firsthand. She also touched on the fact that you're not always going to have everything you need at the time that you need it, and so you just got to get started. So whether that's writing, a podcast, or any other venture that you're thinking about, just stepping out and starting it, and that's how you'll ultimately get to some of the goals you're looking to achieve. So let's get on to her story. Okay, so today's guest is a powerhouse. She's a founder, she's an author, professor, speaker, podcast host, and just overall thought leader on racial equity, inclusion, and particularly focused on managing diverse teams. So I'm really excited for this conversation. I'd like to welcome Minda Hartz to the show.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. So before we start, I do want to ask just like, how are you doing? And I mean that in more of a, everything that's going on in the world. And I know the work, the great work you do can be taxing and can be, you know, draining of energy. It's super important and much needed, but I just want to check in and, you know, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I appreciate that. The work that, you know, we all do is definitely can be taxing because you're educating and you're trying to navigate the trauma that we're experiencing as a Black woman, as a Black man in the workplace and so and in the country. But overall, you know, I know that everyone isn't experiencing quarantine the same. And so on those days where I think, man, I don't know if I can make it through the day, I realize that it, you know, my day isn't all that bad. And I give thanks for even the, I try to find joy in every moment that I can. And so I'm very thankful and full of gratitude, even during this, you know, very volatile time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to have that perspective. So for the listeners that maybe aren't as familiar with you, can you jump back and just give a little bit about your background, how you grew up, where you grew up, those type of things?
Yeah, you're making me go way back digging in the crates. Let me see. So for me, I grew up in California, Southern California, till I was almost a teenager. And then my dad decided that we needed to leave sunny California and go to Illinois outside of Chicago. And so I grew up in my teenage years there. And then after college, went back to California. And, you know, grew up first person in my family to go to college, first person to enter into a corporate job, very low income. We didn't have a lot, but we had a lot of love. And so that love really catapulted me into what I feel now is doing the work that I do. But in my former life, I spent 15 years as a fundraising consultant, and I'd be on site at different universities and colleges, helping them raise money for their endowments. Or, you know, you see these beautiful buildings with some billionaire's name on it. People like me help facilitate those things.
Gotcha. And so growing up, you know, some part in California, part in Illinois, what did you want to be when you grew up?
You know, it's interesting. I was recently thinking about that because when I was younger, I wasn't exposed to a lot of corporate jobs. So I didn't think of those type of jobs, but I was exposed to, you know, those in the Postal Service or those at the airport. And so, you know, back then I'm like, oh, I just want to And they still are good jobs, right? They're stable jobs. But those were the type of jobs that I saw, you know, neighbors having. You know, they had a nice house and a nice car, and they worked at the post office or the airport. And back then, I thought, oh, I want to be able to have what they have, you know, a very stable career. And those were the type of jobs I had aspired to when I was younger.
Gotcha. And you know, again, it always goes back to representation, and that's what you see, and you know you see the outcomes that they're able to get. So it truly becomes kind of your benchmark for some of those goals or some of those things, especially when you're younger.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to transition into what you're doing today and your professional life. So you began The Memo, your company that's really focused on developing and helping women of color, particularly in their own journeys and careers. And you started this over 5 years ago. I'm curious, what led you to step out and start this?
Yeah, as an entrepreneur, I really was focused on building for the pain point that I had initially, because when I was in my former life, I was the only Black woman in the room. And I started to settle into microaggressions. I started to settle into bias. And I thought that I didn't have a voice to be able to speak up on matters that I knew were racially charged, you know, at me or someone else. And after a while, I started to say, you know, what am I doing to make the workplace better than I found it? You know, I'm crying the same tears that my grandmother cried at her job 40 years prior, you know, like certain things like that. And I just wanted to make sure that I was creating resources and tools that shed a light on, you know, intersectionality in terms of, yes, we're talking about men and women in the workplace, but typically that's geared toward, you know, white men and women in the workplace. And so I said, hey, what would it look like to actually pay attention to the women of color that are trying to get a seat at the table and often not having that opportunity or looked over for promotion? So I wanted to shed light on that conversation and, you know, hold some folks accountable to say, you know, wait a second, there's a whole subset of group over here that you're not even paying attention to, or you're not giving the same equal footing, equity, essentially. And so I started to build resources, career, I guess, boot camps, we called them at the time, to help with salary negotiation, networking, just some of those skills that would help us further secure our seat at the table.
Yeah. Ed, you mentioned earlier that you were, you know, first in your family to go to college, first in your family to experience the corporate world. Where did you draw from for those resources? Because I think that that's something that's truly important to think about, is many times we get into these scenarios where we don't really have anybody to go to or anyone to really talk to that's been through what we're going through, which can be really challenging. So I'm curious how you got to those resources.
Yeah, it was actually trial and error, really, because I didn't know what I didn't know, right? But once when I entered the workplace, the advice that I was given, like many of us have been given, is just work hard and keep your head down. And that's exactly what I was doing. But I realized that some of my peers were moving ahead faster and doing less, right? And I didn't want to my work ethic in any way, but I knew that, wait a second, I need to have this work ethic, but I need something else, right? And so I just started to look around at the dominant majority in the workplace, and I just started to see how they were moving, how they were networking, this thing called networking. They were networking, they were, you know, putting themselves out there and all of those sorts of things. So really, I just used the way that they were moving in the workplace and navigating, and I took kind of a blueprint approach. I'm like, well, if Jim is doing that and all of a sudden now he has a promotion, then how can I put my own spin on it? And so I just started to do things that felt natural to me based off of some of the things that I saw. But you're right. I did not have anyone telling me this is, I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a sponsor at the time. So really it was just watching, like listening, educating, and activating. And that was the blueprint. And it was really one of the reasons too, why I wanted to create the memo, because I think sometimes we get in the door and we don't talk about some of those pain points that we have. We try to act like we have it all together, right? And sometimes we suffer in silence by doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And when you talk about the blueprint, you would go on to write your first book, The Memo, which is, you know, really focused on what women of color need to know to secure that seat at the table. What was that process like for you going into, you know, writing a book and being able to take those lessons learned and putting them on paper?
Yeah, it's interesting, because if you would have told me even 10 years ago that some of the experiences that you would have had, that you'd actually be able to turn that trauma into a triumph, and maybe you would be able to use it as a cautionary tale to other people, right? Or those who feel stuck that look like me, or managers who don't know how to manage diverse talent. Like, what would be the book? You know, Toni Morrison, she said, write the book you want to read. And that was really what I did. I wish that I had someone who had pulled me to the side and said, hey, girl, this is what the deal is. You know, I probably would have moved up the ladder much faster had I had, you know, some advice that was geared toward me specifically, or, you know, people of color. And so it was that thing that I never intended, Matt, to write a book, but I did intend to create resources to help change the career narrative as it pertains to Black and brown women in the workplace. And as I started to lean into my courage more, I realized that, okay, it's not just the company, it's actually a body of work through a podcast, through writing. And then eventually I did have the opportunity to write the memo. But even getting to the book process, when my agent pitched the idea to, there's five major publishers, four of them said, oh no, there's no room for this book. This book would never do well. Nobody wants to talk about race in the workplace. Yeah. And now look at the backdrop that we're in, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I do want to give you a chance to talk about what you're doing recently with the launch of the paperback version. And I was really impressed by the interactive experience that you've created, which is like perfect for this time period. So I would love it if you could just share a little bit there and where that idea came from.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You know, so it's interesting. So like I mentioned, four out of the five said no, but all you need is one, which is, you know, and one said yes, and it did go on to become a best-selling book, which I'm very thankful for because our stories need to be told. And because of everyone, I often say success is not a solo sport. Like I couldn't have done that by myself. And because we did, we were hungry to hear our stories told. I even had Black men who would be like, hey, you know, they'd send me a message. I originally got it from my wife or sister, but it's my story too. You know, just wanted to let you know. And so because the book, the first version did well, I had the opportunity to write the paperback. And during quarantine, I actually added two new chapters based off of just the feedback and the emails that I get from women of color, and just, you know, managers in general. And so I added some scripts because I think sometimes we have the theory, but we may not have the language to put it into practice. And so I'm going on a second leg of book tour being in quarantine, and I've created an interactive experience online to kind of simulate inequalities in the workplace that women of color go through, along with facts, because sometimes people are like, oh, that's just, you're in your feelings, right? No, there's some facts based on why we experience some of the things we do. And so I want to give people an inroad into what it's like to be a woman of color in the workplace. And if you are a woman of color and you come to the experience, then, you know, just some validation and a place to be able to gather more tools and add to your career toolkit.
Yeah, no, that's truly powerful too, to like, not only did you go out and create the blueprint with the book, but then to take the feedback and then come back and give even more resources. It's truly impressive. So as I think about, you know, we're in quarantine, many of us are, you know, missing travel very dearly. I'm sure you were, you know, spent a lot of your life on planes and in hotels and what have you. I'm curious, just from your overall work, professional life perspective, how have you adjusted during the pandemic?
Yeah, it's crazy. The last time I was on a plane was March 8th. And and I was on the road at least 3 to 4 times a week prior to that. And so I remember, like 5 days in, you know, 10 days in, the more we kind of learned more about the virus, I was like, okay, clearly I'm not going anywhere. And I did start to freak out a bit because I make, you know, a large percentage of my income on public speaking. And I knew that would probably, and I'm promoting this book, right? And so there's all these things. And so I was like, oh God, this is like the worst thing that could happen. I decided that I actually have the ability to redefine what success looks like for me. And it was taking the time to create, you know, this memo experience that I started working on way back, you know, months ago, just figuring out how would I bring it to the market? How would I do some of these things? And I've really just allowed myself to dream bigger inside my house. And the more I dreamed bigger and took the limits off of myself, just because I'm in somewhat of a stationary position doesn't mean that there's a world that can't be opened up to new possibilities and ideas. And so I've really just, I guess you could say, dismantled my old office and just created a new one.
Have to adjust.
Yeah.
So you also do kind of a regular content series on your IG channel. You're also your YouTube channel, which is, again, additional resources that you're providing to the community. So I'm curious, was that something that you had, you know, already in the works? Did you adjust that given, you know, a lot of us are virtually engaging? What led you to do that experience?
Yeah, well, I want to tell you and your listeners a little secret. Like, I am very much an introvert at heart. And so I really had to push myself to do those things. But it actually came just from wanting to be of service to others, because I didn't have the IG Live and I didn't have the LinkedIn Lives before COVID-19. And I don't really like, I'm not to say I don't like being on camera, but it's not my, I'm not my most comfortable place. And so I said, you know, people are hurting right now. They're thinking, what about my job? You know, I need these extra tools. And I really just leaned into courage again and pushed aside my caution and said, what can I do? How can I be helpful during this time for your periods where a lot of us are feeling like, what am I going to do? You know, am I going to have a job in, you know, 6 months? And so I just started to create more tools just to be an additional resource. And it's been such a blessing to me to see other people blessed in this way.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I, you know, I definitely recommend everybody pick up the memo and, you know, check it out, check out the new chapters, definitely check out the interactive experience. But for just a snippet of your advice, I would love your expert opinion on, you know, myself as a Black man and other men of color, what can we do to be more supportive of women in color in our lives, in our workforce, you know, in our larger circles?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. I'm actually going to tell you just a short and sweet story. And I think this will resonate with the answer that I want to give is before quarantine, I went to a company in Portland, Oregon, and I gave the talk, you know, about women of color in the workplace. And there were allies in the room, men allies of all colors. And at the end, there was a gentleman who happened to be a Black man. He waited till everybody had, you know, I'd signed all the books. And he's like, you know, can I talk to you for a second? And he said, you know, I was listening to you. And initially, I didn't think that this conversation was for me. And he said, but the more I listened to you, I'm definitely, he's like, I downloaded the book as you were talking. And he said, you know, I have a responsibility to the Black women on my team, to the women of color on my team, to stand in the gap for them, to advocate for them. And I have failed the women on my team. And coming here today reminded me of so much I need to do. I need to listen. I need to be supportive and realize that I have a sense of privilege that other Black women or brown women don't have. And I think that's the thing, right? Just to understand that, yes, there's a hierarchy of oppression, not to say that Black men don't experience some of the same things, but they experience in a different way. There are these levels of privilege that Black men have. And I think that how do we leverage your privilege to bring us, to help us along too, right? And that's reading books like The Memo to be aware and saying, okay, now I'm aware of what's going on. There's this wage gap. There's this opportunity gap. There's this board gap. And how can I use my privilege and my voice, right, and influence to help, you know, our sisters? And so I think once we become aware that you do have a role to play, you just have to decide how you want to play it.
No, I think that's really important. I know that we a lot of times fail to realize and recognize all the various privileges that many of us hold. So I think it is important to identify it. And then to your point, to feel out how you can actually use it to help those that may not also have that similar privilege. So you did announce that you're working on a second book, Pack Light, that's scheduled to come out next year. So I'm curious, like building anticipation, how will it build on the memo? What can people look forward to in your next title that's coming out?
I'm drinking a lot of Uncle Nearest, Matt. It's a lot of pressure.
Yes, yes.
But it's pressure in the sense of, I think prior, you know, your earlier question about how am I doing? I'm writing a book about how racial trauma sometimes stops us from moving forward in our career, and being in racial trauma right now mm-hmm. in the world, it seems like a weird juxtaposition. But, you know, Pack Light was really based off of a song that I love by Erykah Badu called Bag Lady. And I really thought about the racial trauma that each of us picks up at our different jobs. And we don't talk about it. We don't say anything. We just throw it in the bag and we take it to the next place, right? And at some point, those bags start to get in our way if we don't allow ourselves to address the pain and heal from the pain. And how do we maintain our sense of well-being, mental stamina, well-being, so that we can have overall career health? And so I talk about, you know, in the Black community particularly, how therapy had been kind of this taboo thing. And then, you know, the different ways that we can heal through, you know, church, through therapy, but then also what role do we play in making sure that we have the hard conversations that we need to with our coworkers or our colleagues so that we don't keep being injured and harmed in the environments that we're in.
Yeah, no, it's really important. And it's come up in many of my discussions. And it's for me, it was very eye-opening that it took the incidents that are happening right now for me to actually feel like I could let down and tell people I'm not doing okay. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like a lot of us have been carrying this like for so long. And, you know, we go into these boardrooms, we go into these meetings and Zooms now. And we kind of turn it on and it's like, okay, I'm not allowed to expose the human side, which to your point, that's us carrying that baggage, which prevents us from doing other things. And so I think that's a great area for people to explore, not only those of us that are dealing with it, but anybody that comes into contact with somebody that may be dealing with any of that racial trauma or intergenerational trauma mm-hmm. that we just have continued to collect. So yeah, definitely look forward to that.
Yeah, you make a great point. I mean, the fact is that half the time we don't even give ourselves permission to say that we're hurt, right? And I think that has caused the people in our lives sometimes to not get the full us.
Yep, definitely. So my next question is somewhat selfish, but for others out there that are considering, you know, becoming a podcast host or being on podcasts, you know, you've been doing this for a while and having guests on your show, not only your podcast, but you also do other things across other channels. Like, what would you recommend people look to do to start one? How would you recommend somebody get going?
I know this may sound really basic, but just get started. Like, I think about my first couple episodes and I didn't even have a microphone. I was using the Anchor app recording on my phone, you know? And so like, well, that, you know, I'll get the mic later. I just want to get started. And you iterate as you keep going and you learn, you know, and now I'm on 4 seasons of my podcast and, you know, I do have a microphone now. I have some headphones, you know, but you get better. But, you know, you will never have everything you need at all the times you need them. So it's best that you just get started because the people who need to hear your voice, they're waiting for you right now.
Yeah, definitely. And that's you hit on a good point of people needing to hear your voice. I want to pivot a bit. And, you know, you did mention you're an introvert, so hopefully you'll bear with me here. But switching to the brand of Minda for a bit. When did you discover your voice? Was there a moment? Would something happen where you realized that, you know, I have a voice and I have to use it?
Yeah, it's a day that I'll really never forget. It was, I guess it was maybe 2014, somewhere along that line. I was just getting ready to leave a really toxic work environment. And I had a hard conversation with a senior leader. And, you know, in that meeting, I did everything I could to keep the tears inside because it was just horrible. And I remember walking to my car and I finally got to the car and turned the car on, radio comes out and I bust out in tears. And Whitney Houston, "Where Do Broken Hearts Go" is on the, is on the radio. And I thought, yes, where do the broken hearts go of women of color when we can't take it anymore? And in that moment I said, I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what to do necessarily, but I want to make sure that I use my voice so that the next generation and the current generation of women of color don't have to keep going through the same stuff inside the workplace where we're not seen, where we're not heard, and we're not valued. And I really had to lean into that and say, we all have a voice. We just have to decide how we're going to use it and who we're going to be courageous for. And I really said, you know, even if I help 5 people, if I only help 2 people, I've done more for the workplace. And that's where I just started leaning into that, knowing that if I don't say something about this, then how many people do I hurt in the process?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny. Someone was asking me the other day about being a storyteller and like, you know, what is the way or the tips or whatnot. And, you know, my first thing is like your story, your voice, it's one of the few things that you are the leading expert on. Like no one else knows more than you about your story. And you have to lean into that and like truly own it and tell it and keep telling it and ensure that it's not bragging. It's like, you know, you have experiences, you have gained wisdom through just living life. And the more you can share that with someone else so they don't have to go through what you may have had to endure, like it's only beneficial. So 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Thank you for using your voice.
Thank you. So I want to switch to family. What role has your family played in your journey and, you know, kind of helped you get to where you are?
Yeah. You know, my family is very, I guess, spiritual, if you will, religious to some people probably. And I think that their prayers have really helped me, because those moments where I have questioned myself, am I the right person to be carrying this baton right now? You know, do I have all the skills necessary? You know, when I was on book tour, you know, my parents drove like 6 hours to see me at one place, you know, hours to see me at another place. And just being able to look out in the audience and, you know, see your family. Or when I was in LA, you know, my grandmother got to be in the audience, and some of my great aunts, and you're just like, wow, look at how far we've all come. And you can't do it without that love. I mean, you can do it without family, but it makes it so much sweeter when you have their respect and their love. And I'm just so glad that we could share in this moment together.
Yeah, definitely. So lightening it up a little bit.
Yes.
Pandemic has changed a lot of our behaviors. It's changed a lot of our day-to-days. I'm curious, what's been your favorite pandemic purchase?
That's easy, actually. It's my computer. I didn't realize that I'd been working on a laptop for like 7 years. I'm like, oh, my back, I'm getting old. So I'm like, I need a desktop computer. And I probably hadn't had one of those since I was in college. So it was nice to buy that purchase. And a very large screen, too. And I'm like, yeah. God, what was I doing before?
Yeah. It's funny how we used to optimize for convenience and like portability. And now it's like the complete opposite. Like you're optimizing for being able to be comfortable and to, you know, and not have to squint at a screen or a small keyboard or what have you.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything that you've learned about yourself over these months and in time of not being on airplanes?
You know, I used to be a person who would say yes to a lot of things because I felt like, you know, if I can do it and I have even 15 minutes, I'm going to do it. But what I realized was that I wasn't allowing space to say yes to the things that I really want to do. So I was saying yes to things, not because I really wanted to do them, but because I thought they were the right thing. And so I, in quarantine, have given myself permission not to say yes to everything. And by doing that, I've created more mental space, more space to create, and just more self-care. And so I found that self-care is the most revolutionary act that I've been able to exert in quarantine, and it feels good.
Yeah, no, that is a great tip or advice that everyone should be doing. It's something that I am not good at, and I wish I was better at. Because you're right, it's giving yourself the ability to say maybe not no, but not right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not feeling like, you know, we my wife and I always talk about not being victims of our calendar. Because, you know, somebody wants to schedule this, somebody wants to schedule that. You're like, yep, I can do it. I can do it. And just because it's open on the calendar doesn't necessarily mean you should say yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you can only be mad at yourself when you're in a Zoom from like 8 to 8, right?
Exactly. It's by your own doing. Yeah. So looking back at as far as you've come, have you had a Mama, We Made It moment?
Yes, actually two, and they happened in 2020, actually. One, right before quarantine hit, I met Mrs. Michelle Obama. We were speaking at the same conference, and
wow,
I got to have like 2 minutes with her, and that was the best 2 minutes that I've ever had in life. And then recently, I've had the opportunity to interview Kimberly Crenshaw, who is the mother of intersectionality, and it's really based off of the work that I do. And so that was definitely one of those mama, if this ain't making it, I don't know what is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, both of those are really good. So if someone were looking at your path and they were, you know, wondering, how do I get there? Where do I start? What would be your advice to them today to take that first step in that direction?
Mm-hmm. One thing I would say is one quote that I live by every single day is by Audre Lorde. And she says, beware of feeling like you're not good enough to deserve it. And oftentimes we are the person who gets in our way because we feel like we don't deserve good things, or we don't deserve to go after, you know, our dreams or what have you. And we have to first see ourselves in those situations even before we're there. And so tell yourself a new story that you can, you will, you just have to activate. And so for me, it really was consistency because I didn't have a large following. I'm not famous, you know, all the things that people would say that you would need to get book deals and all of these different things. But in 2015, I started writing what I called a Monday memo. And every Monday I would put out a Monday memo, even if it was just me and my mom reading it, you know what I mean? And eventually, just every Monday, that consistency talking about women of color in the workplace. And eventually those memos became a book, right? Yeah. And I still put out those Monday memos. You know, it's more than just me and my mom now, thankfully, but I still that same consistency, as they say, keep that same energy. And so once you find what you're passionate about or what your level of expertise, you know, find it, do it, stick to it. And if you build it, they will come.
Yeah. No, I love that because for me, there's two things in there that I think everyone should take away. One is the consistency. So, you know, it's like continue to chip away at whatever the thing is that you're going after, like showing up every day and knowing that it's not an overnight thing. It's not something that's just going to flip on, you know, like a light switch, and that if you continue to put in the hours or the reps, you're going to see the reward. And then the other thing I think that not enough of us do is writing, because that's truly how we figure out our thoughts. Because many of us spend so much time on Zooms, or we spend so much time running around, you know, whether it's after kids, errands, we find things to fill our time, but we don't really sit down and truly like, what do I think about this? Or how do I feel about this? And I think when you put it on paper, or even if that's, you know, digital or real paper, it allows you to actually have a record of what you thought. And it allows you to know, like, okay, I thought that this day and it changed the next Monday, or it changed the next month. But I think that that's something that if I could get in a time machine and go back, I would definitely tell myself to write more, because I think it definitely pulls out. And, you know, like you said, you look up and you had a book, which is amazing.
It's crazy. I didn't even see that far ahead. Right. You know, but you never know. And if you, what do they say? If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready, you know?
Exactly. So we're going to close out with a little bit of fun. It's not grits and rap lyrics. I will disappoint you there. And for our listeners, that if you haven't heard Minda's podcast, she always closes by asking her guests about liking grits and how they like their grits, and then what's their favorite rap lyric. So definitely check that out to hear all the various answers. But I want to ask you, when they turned your life story into a movie, who do you want to play you on the big screen?
That's one question I hadn't thought about. You know who I really, really like her acting, and I think it's just the consistency, is Zendaya. Is that how you say her name? I would love to see her as an older actress. Really, I like the multidimensional role she's starting to play. So I think she'd be cool.
Yeah. And so what would the trailer of your movie communicate?
This is going to sound probably really silly, but I would say she went from food stamps to foie gras.
I like it. I could see the poster. I could see the poster already.
I mean, that might be like, I don't know who, maybe that's a Netflix, that go straight to Netflix.
Yep. I see it. I see, you know, when movies come back, I see the movie poster already.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm a huge fan of stories. I've enjoyed hearing more about your unique experience. But for you, if there were, you know, three people that you would like to have on your podcast that you haven't had, or people that you would like to sit with, they could be with us, they could have passed, who would be those three people?
Yep. I love this question. For starters, I definitely would want to have Jesus on it, you know, because I think that we've probably mixed his message up quite a bit. And I would like to go back in and get some clarity on a few things. But he was like the biggest brand ambassador ever, and he's been able to still stay relevant. So I'd love to talk to Jesus about that. And then also, I would love to have Lucille Ball. I'm a really big I Love Lucy fan. And from the business side of what she was able to do to build Desilu Productions and be one of the first women to have a production studio, it's something that I aspire to put out that type of content in the future. And lastly, I would say Audre Lorde. I eat, breathe, sleep like her writings and her poems. And she was just such ahead of her time. And I hope that I can leave a similar legacy.
Very cool. So before we close out, is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share or anything you want to ask me?
Well, I think I've shared everything that I've wanted to, but one thing I'd love to ask you is, what made you start your podcast?
Yeah. So this is the question, probably the most popular question I get these days. For me, it's very similar to what you were saying, is where you were sitting there and you had that moment in time of, you know, I need to share my voice, even if it was two or five people. My moment was when we had our youngest daughter in 2019. I spent a lot of time listening to podcasts because, you know, I'd be up walking in the middle of the night, couldn't have the TV on, couldn't have, you know, any form of light on. So you're in the dark. And so I'd just put in the AirPods and you kind of pace listening to podcasts. And it became like, you know, my selected method of learning things, hearing information, hearing people's stories. And I was so into it, and I was listening to all these different types of podcasts. But what I found is many of the voices I was listening to in my ears, they weren't of people that looked like me, or they weren't of people that had my experience. And so I set out to do a bit of, you know, research on my side with my network of friends to like dig into their stories and like understand what happened in their life. And I started it from a leadership perspective because I'm just fascinated with how people approach leadership. There's so many different ways in and so many different personalities. But what I found is like there were these fascinating stories that my friends of, you know, 20 years had that I just didn't know because I never asked. And so it literally sent me down this path of, I think that we should be telling our stories of those people that look like you and I, so that people that maybe haven't heard them have a chance to hear them. And so that was really, you know, what I set out to do and why, you know, I selected kind of this medium and this format to share those stories. And, you know, I've been blown away by the depth of the stories and like the learnings and things that people have been able to share, because it's definitely, again, it's selfish. Like I'm being able to take a master's class in other people's stories and just make myself a better person, a better father, a better husband, a better, you know, business person, et cetera. So that's what sent me down this path.
I love it. I always love hearing why people start what they, you know, the businesses or podcasts that they do. And you have the perfect storyteller's voice, Matt.
Well, thank you. The name doesn't hurt either, from what I've been told. So before we go, if people want to connect with you, they want to find out more, obviously there's a bunch of links to various things you've produced, but where's the one place I should send them?
You can send them to mindahearts.com and you'll find everything there that on how to connect with me.
Awesome. Well, we will do that. And again, appreciate you taking the time. I've really enjoyed it, learned a lot, and wish you nothing but best in the upcoming things you have planned, and look forward to the next book.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to this episode of What's Your Story podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe, leave us a review, and share with someone else you think might also enjoy it. And if you're interested in keeping up with all things stories and marketing and inclusive leadership, head over to mattestory.com/download to sign up for my monthly newsletter. Until next time, keep sharing your story.